Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 26, Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. Text 30. Samshayo tapapayaso.
Samshayo tapapayaso.
Nishtayasmita evacha.
Nishtayasmita evacha.
Swapa ityuchate bhuter.
Swapa ityuchate bhuter.
Lakshanam vritata prita. Samshaya.
Samshaya.
Doubt.
Doubt.
Acha.
Acha.
Then.
Then.
Vipayasa.
Vipayasa.
Misapprehension.
Misapprehension.
Nishchaya.
Nishchaya.
Correct apprehension.
Correct apprehension.
Smriti.
Smriti.
Memory.
Memory.
Eva.
Eva.
Also.
Also.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Swapa.
Swapa.
Sleep.
Sleep.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
Uchate.
Uchate.
Are said.
Are said.
Bhute.
Bhute.
Of intelligence.
Of intelligence.
Lakshanam.
Lakshanam.
Characteristics.
Characteristics.
Vrittita.
Vrittita.
By their functions.
By their functions.
Prita.
Prita.
Different.
Different.
Translation. Doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension, memory, and sleep, as determined by their different functions, are said to be the distinct characteristics of intelligence. Purport. Doubt is one of the most important functions. Excuse me. Doubt is one of the important functions of intelligence. Blind acceptance of something does not give evidence of intelligence. Therefore, the word samshaya is very important. In order to cultivate intelligence, one should be doubtful in the beginning. But doubting is not very favorable when information is received from the proper source. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that doubting the words of the authority is the cause of destruction. As described in the Patanjali Yoga system, pramana viparyaya vikalpa nidra smitya. By intelligence only can one understand things as they are. By intelligence only can one understand whether or not he is the body. The study to determine whether one's identity is spiritual or material begins in doubt. When one is able to analyze his actual position, the false identification with the body is detected. This is called viparyasa. When false identification is detected, then real identification can be understood. Real understanding is described here as nishchaya, or proved experimental knowledge. This experimental knowledge can be achieved when one has understood the false knowledge. By experimental or proved knowledge, one can understand that he's not the body, but spirit soul. Smriti means memory, and swapa means sleep. Sleep is also necessary to keep the intelligence in working order. If there is no sleep, the brain cannot work nicely. In Bhagavad Gita, it is especially mentioned that persons who regulate eating, sleeping, and other necessities of the body in the proper proportion become very successful in the yoga process. These are some of the aspects of the analytical study of intelligence as described in both the Patanjali Yoga system and the Sankhya philosophy system of Kapila Dev and Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Jnana Chimanandasya Jnanam Jnana Salakaya Chachu Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. We are hearing that doubt is one of the important functions of intelligence. Prabhupada says that blind acceptance of something does not give evidence of intelligence. So you may wonder, what is the proper way to approach Krishna consciousness? It may seem to those of you who have just come here during the past year that a lot of blind acceptance is required. And of course, that's what the non-devotees, those outside of Krishna consciousness. They think. They speculate that we are just blindly accepting some belief because we need some kind of crutch to support ourselves because we are really too weak to face the intricacies of life unaided by some kind of conjured up religion which will make us fired up. So people out there, they think that we are having blind faith, blind acceptance, and sometimes even those who are coming to take shelter of Krishna, Prabhupada's movement, they may mistakenly think that, okay, I've suffered so much in the material world, I've suffered either physically or economically or intellectually or mentally. Now I just come to the temple and I just, whatever they say, I just accept blindly that that's the way to happiness. That's what everybody's doing here. They just get into this Krishna and they just push that Krishna into their brain and then they look happy. That's what I want. I just want to be happy. You know? I don't want to think anymore. I don't want to use my critical intelligence anymore. I just want to be happy. I want relief. I want a release. So that may be there in the beginning. But that is not actually what goes on in Krishna consciousness. We must bear in mind one thing, however, that if you're fortunate enough to blindly accept the right thing, then all glories. Just like a child, when he or she sticks the hand into the fire burns whether the child understands the fire or not. Similarly, the holy name of Krishna will act whether you understand it or not. The holy name of Krishna does not wait for anything. As soon as the tongue vibrates the name Krishna, then there's action. Even if you utter the holy name in a joking way, or even in a malicious way, still there is action, because the holy name is not different from Krishna. If someone utters the holy name in a blasphemous way, first they are punished. They undergo the reactions for their blasphemy, and then the effects of their having chanted the name of Krishna take over. This is how unlimitedly potent Krishna is. So, if you happen to blindly accept the right thing, then you're fortunate. Still, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that when you become equipped with knowledge of Krishna, you become more fixed in devotional service. You're better able to render devotional service as you become more and more conversant with the power and glories of the Lord. So as we were speaking the other day, we can't simply say that, well, all I have to do is chant Hare Krishna, I'll just leave it at that. When Srila Prabhupada has said that you should read his books, you should become knowledgeable in Krishna consciousness. If you neglect that, then you are making an offense to the holy name. You're neglecting the order of the spiritual master. So how can you say, on the one hand, we're just going to chant Hare Krishna, when you're neglecting the order of the spiritual master, so therefore the chanting will not quite be effective. Now, Prabhupada also says here that one should be doubtful in the beginning, but doubting is not very favorable when information is received from the proper source. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that doubting the words of the authority is the cause of destruction. Now, this is the actual challenge when you come to Krishna consciousness, and this is the actual challenge for remaining in Krishna consciousness. Are you getting information from the proper source? That is the whole crux of Krishna consciousness. If you can establish that you are getting information from the proper source, then what is the point in doubting? You should be critical. Where's my information coming from? Who is the ultimate authority where my knowledge is coming from? It is on this point that these are the gallows that we hang modern society and its knowledge on. All their knowledge springs from imperfect sources, therefore it changes so often. But people are so much in the mode of ignorance today, they think the quicker the knowledge changes, that means more progress. Just see how quickly things are changing. 20 years ago we thought this, now we think that. It shows progress. Just like new computer hardware comes out every 2 months. So people think, wow, things are just getting better and better. So they also think if knowledge changes very quickly, then that means things are really advancing very quickly. It takes great detachment to not get caught up in all this, to be able to stand back and see that no one really knows what's going on. They're coming up with so many different theories and intermediate understandings, but no one has any idea of the ultimate source. Therefore, there can't be real intermediate knowledge. It's impossible. It takes a lot of restraint and self-control to be able to stand free from the waves of passion and ignorance these days. Just like if any of you are into computers, you know it takes a lot of restraint not to get caught up in upgrading every other month, getting the latest this, the latest that. I was over at Kirtaraj's house, and I must say I don't want to flatter devotees, I just want to criticize them, but the fact is, I noticed, I was surprised. I saw his computer equipment and it wasn't the latest stuff. That's very impressive in this day and age because computeritis is one aspect of the whirlpool of passion. Just like women in the material world, they got to get more shoes, another set of shoes, a different color of shoes, different dress. The men can't understand that at all. Why, when a woman walks down the street with shoe stores, she sees unlimited opportunities. She's already got 20 pairs of shoes at home, but she's got to get that new pair of shoes because that's going to go right with the dress she's going to buy a month later. Men can't figure that out. Maybe it's just not. And of course, the women look at the computeritis, and they wonder, what's this guy, why, every month he's got to get a new computer component. Why does it go on and on and on and on? The guy spends all his time on his computer. He doesn't talk to his wife. He doesn't talk to his kids. So in this way, Maya has something for everybody. And we all call that progress. A new mall has opened. A new computer has come out. A new chip has come out. The new style of dresses is just in. This is all, as Prabhupada said, Maya Sukaya, the false pretense of happiness. So once we are able to stand back, we can start to see things as they are. We are different than the rest of the world because we know where our knowledge is coming from, and we know the qualifications where our knowledge comes from. We know the qualifications of the source. We are not blindly accepting anything. We are understanding Krishna. We are understanding why Krishna is different. And we take our knowledge from Krishna. But to be a materialist, you must spend your whole life dependent on imperfect sources. And you never even analyze the sources of your knowledge. Otherwise, people would start comparing. On the one hand, I'm believing such and such scientist or such and such philosopher. On the other hand, there's Shukadev Goswami. Now, how does my mundane authority compare with Shukadev Goswami or Prithvi Maharaj? We invite the comparison. So we are not following blindly. We're not blindly accepting. We are the most critical. We know knowledge comes from somewhere. Let's analyze where it's coming from. Let's see the qualifications of where the knowledge is coming from. Now, how more critical can you get? We're not going to waste our time dealing with the intermediate aspects. Prabhupada taught us, take it right to the source. Who's speaking this knowledge? What are their senses like? What is their capacity like? How much can they understand? Are they unlimited? Are they present everywhere? In other words, we're not so foolish that uncritically and blindly we accept everything that a limited, imperfect, illusion person says. So we are the most critical. But people, they cannot see that because they're so bewildered by all the intermediate phases. Their heads are filled with changing styles, upgrading this, changing that, getting a new this and that, and this prevents them from ever focusing on what the ultimate issues are. And it is the ultimate issues that are most practical. But people today are taught the ultimate issues, those are for the philosophers. The everyday man needs to understand, simply, when the next computer chip is coming out. His wife needs to understand where's the sales on the shoes. These are the important things. And then if you have some time, you might think about some cosmic theories. But otherwise, the main point is how to get a good stimulation from your body and mind. If you can do that for part of your life, consider yourself very fortunate. This is the standard today. This is the mode of passionate ignorance. One thing we must understand is that there is no question of spirituality without the mode of goodness. This is another thing that Prabhupada taught us. The beginning of spiritual appreciation is sattva-gun, not passion and ignorance. Now, what is the rajagun? Sometimes you mistake sattva-gun for rajagun. Mode of passion means art, culture, philosophy, morals, and ethics. That is the mode of passion. All for the purpose, all that is for the purpose of my own material benefit. Any so-called high art, philosophy, culture, ethics, morality today, all leads to the bodily conception of life. How to benefit my body, how to benefit my mind. Therefore, it's considered a mode of passion. Srila Prabhupada explains like that. Mode of goodness is something else. Mode of goodness requires discipline of the senses and at least a theoretical understanding that you are not the body, you are spirit soul. That is the mode of goodness. In that, on that level, spiritual knowledge begins. Actually, spiritual knowledge is beyond Triguna Mayi, beyond the three modes of material nature, but it begins, the appreciation begins with the mode of goodness. Now there's a very interesting verse that Arjuna asks Krishna in the 17th chapter entitled Division of Faith, Bhagavad Gita. Text 1, Yashashtya Vidyan Puchrija Yajate Shradayanvita Tesham Nishtatika Krishna. Arjuna is asking, my dear Lord, in the previous chapter, you have discriminated between the demons and the devotees by saying that the devotees follow the Shastra Vidhi, follow the rules and regulations of the Shastra, and the demons do not. Now I'd like to propose to you this point. Yashastra Vidhi Mutsrija Yajante Shradayanvita. There are many people we can see who do not follow the Vedic injunctions, yet they have some kind of faith. Now, is that faith in goodness, passion, or ignorance? It's a very important point because you see this all the time. Everybody has faith, no matter how they're situated. Now, what is the nature of that faith? This is what Arjuna wanted to know. They're not following the Vedic injunctions, yet they have some kind of faith. And in fact, you'll hear people say, as long as you've got faith in something, it doesn't matter what it is. It just has some meaning in your life. So-called sophisticated people today, they say that everybody needs their myth. Each person needs a myth. And the problem with Western civilization is that it's lost its myth. It's lost its meaning. And therefore people are so distraught and empty. Therefore we should look at the example of the indigenous peoples, the aborigines, they all have a meaning for their life. And the Westerners, they have no meaning. So, some people are really pushing today that each person and each society should have a myth. It doesn't matter whether it's true or not, but just something that gives meaning for you that allows you to keep it together. So people think this is what Krishna consciousness is. It's something that someone has conjured up and it's holding your life together for you. Okay, that's all right. Long as something is giving cohesion to your life, if it's the Krishna thing, it's all right. Whatever thing, have some inner meaning, and in that way you can relate better to nature and be more sensitive to other people, and your relationships will spring to life because you have some kind of myth that's sustaining you, and everybody needs a myth. So this is what so-called sophisticated people, they say, when you get right down to it, all the different meaning systems and myths, they're all the same, they all do the same purpose. And if you really want to get sophisticated, then you understand that all these myths and meanings spring up from some deep, impersonal consciousness underneath everything. In other words, when all the belief systems and all the myths dissolve, they just go right back into that impersonal oneness. So if you're cool enough to understand it, actually, it's all one, and none of the faiths and beliefs and myths actually are substantial. They all just disappear into oneness when you analyze them at their root. If you're sophisticated and cool enough to understand that, then you just say it's all one and you appreciate everything, you do everything, and there's no differences, no distinctions because it's all the whatever. And you just become one with the whatever. Whether it's Krishna or surfing or this or that, it's just all. So people, they think, oh, this is really sophisticated. All the faiths, all the beliefs, all the spiritual texts, all the different spiritual philosophies, they're just various devices to put meaning into our life, and they're all coming from the impersonal, collective unconsciousness. They're all just springing up. And if you pursue them to their root, you just get pure oneness. That's where it's really at. So, of course, Bhagavad Gita does not accept that. How does it not accept that? We must understand that there is no question of spiritual understanding without some differentiation. You must differentiate yourself so that you are in the mode of goodness, at least, before you can understand actual spiritual knowledge. It's not that you can just act any way you want and you understand the same as everybody. If you act like a dog, you can't expect to understand the same things that a Brahmin can understand. And the label on the Vedic literature very clearly says, Brahmanatiti Brahmana. If you want to understand Brahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth, you at least must be a Brahmin. You must be fixed in the mode of goodness. People find this an astonishing point. What do you mean? How can it be that your lifestyle affects what you can know? But this is a fundamental principle of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada explained it this way once. He said, if you want to know what someone can understand, first look at their behavior. Now this is quite radical for Western society. If you want to know what someone can understand, look at their behavior first. Everyone will say, well, behavior's got nothing to do with it. Whether they're homo, hetero, both, this, that, however their lifestyle is, whatever they drink or get intoxicated on, it's got nothing to do with their intelligence and their understanding, their objectivity in pure science. Just forget it. We just look at their lifestyle and then we can know whether they can understand and what they can understand. This is what sometimes rubs people the wrong way. They think that we are just a bit puffed up and self-righteous about these regulative principles. A bit prudish. All right, if you guys are into celibacy and not even wine, not even tea, if you're into all that and you're not into recreational sex, just procreational, if that's what you're into, great, but why do you beat your chest about it? Why do you present it like it's a universal formula for peace and contentment? They think like that. You may live like that, and I'll live my own way. You may call me decadent, but we're going to understand the same thing. We're going to have the same intellectual powers. We're going to have the same powers of comprehension about anything. The soul, the so-called soul, the universe, whatever, God, whatever you want to call it. They're all just different motifs anyway, springing out from the impersonal collective unconsciousness. So people may think like that because it's totally revolutionary for them to see a direct connection between their lifestyle, their behavior, and what they can understand. In other words, what we are saying, our fundamental position in Krishna consciousness is that knowledge is state-specific. That means according to the mode of nature you're in, that determines what you can understand. Now, let's say you want to cook. You want to cook and you have a log stove. You need fire. You don't need the wood. Although, from the Vedic point of view, the example is given that within the wood is the fire. In other words, the energy, the fire energy, is stored up in the wood. The potential is there. So, you might say, it's all one. The wood, the smoke, the fire, it's all the same thing. No. You need to get the fire out of the wood. So, if you say that you can do anything for your spiritual life, you can do anything for your spiritual advancement, just go within yourself. This is like saying you can just put wood in the stove and leave it at that, and there'll be a fire. Put the wood in the stove and start cooking. Everything you need is within the wood. This is ridiculous. You have to cultivate that fire, the flame. You have to bring the flame out of the wood. So similarly, we have to learn how to rise through the modes of nature and get at least to goodness. It's not that you can just get fire from wood without a process of igniting and bringing out the flame. So although it's true that the wood, the smoke, and the fire are one, still, there are differences. And those differences are very crucial. We need a process how to bring out our spirituality. And for that, you at least have to cultivate the mode of goodness. So these are very important points in understanding what is intelligence and how to doubt. We are taught by the disciple succession to doubt anyone who is not getting their knowledge from a perfect source. Now, is that unreasonable? Now, it's true, when you first come here, you don't know so much about Krishna, but you see everybody fired up, enthusiastic, and wholesome, and you think, well, I want to be like that. But the point is, if you want to understand Krishna, there's full opportunity to understand why everyone is so happy and knowledgeable. You can do that. And obviously, you'll be a much more fixed-up devotee, able to help yourself and others if you'll do that. Now, Prabhupada points out that once you're in contact with a proper authority, there's no point in doubting anymore. Just like in the Gita, Krishna says, Asam Shayam Samagram Mam. Arjuna, I'm going to teach you Mayasakta Manaparta Yogam Yunjan Manashraya. I'm going to teach you how your consciousness can be attached to me. I'm going to teach you in such a way that you'll understand everything fully and there'll be no doubts. That is the way Krishna teaches. Now, what mundane teacher do you know? What mundane authority do you know who can say, I'm going to teach you everything fully and you won't have any doubts? People today, they are glorifying the mode of ignorance. How is that? It's very cool and hip these days to be uncertain about everything and glorify that as the real state of knowing. You'd be shocked to hear statements that so-called learned people are making about the bliss of uncertainty. One guy, the so-called famous Ayurvedic, modern Ayurvedic impersonalist, written books in 22 languages, the guy who's worth $15 million U.S., he got on the radio once and said, you should just pray, Lord, make every day as uncertain as possible. The more uncertain you are, the more you have a chance for special synchronicities to happen in your life, special occurrences. If you just are uncertain about everything, then you'll be able to perceive the magic in life. Sounds very intoxicating for fools, doesn't it?
Yeah, that sounds great. Just don't know anything. Just leave yourself wide open, and then the magic of life takes over. Things start happening automatically in a wondrous way.
Behind all this is a pop impersonalism, that if you leave yourself uncertain, which you can't do anyway, but if you leave yourself uncertain, then all the fascinating motifs bubble up into your life from the impersonal collective unconscious underneath everything. And it'll be just like a wonderful show for you. Some people today, they're talking like that. Uncertainty is a wonder. The soul loves mystery. The soul doesn't want any definite answers. The soul craves mystery. It delights in mystery, in not knowing. And people hear this and they say,
oh, very aggressive. Yes, yes.
And then they turn on the Krishna conscious person who has real knowledge and they say, oh, you guys, you're just so definite. You're just so getting fixed knowledge in everything. Krishna consciousness is so explicit. Everything is so explained. That can't be really spiritual. This is what they're thinking. If everything is explained so wonderfully and comprehensively, you've got so many books, it's got to be dogma, because real spirituality is just, it's just the mystery. And people, they think that.
Oh yes, this is very good, the mystery.
The unsolvable mystery. They like that. The senses, the lust, likes that, because if the mystery is unsolvable, you can go on with your lusty affairs. But as soon as you accept the Shastra Vidhi, the rules and regulations of the Shastra, then look out. Then the regulation comes in, and no one wants that. But they want to talk about spiritual things at the same time. They get a lot of money that way. So we are doubtful only up until the point that we establish Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After that, doubt has no function. Once we have doubted that we are the body, once we have doubted that we can take knowledge from just anywhere, once we understand we're spirit soul and that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and to hear from Bhagavan is the ultimate, then doubt is not necessary. Now what does that mean? Does that mean from that point on we just follow blindly? No, what does it mean to be Krishna conscious? It means Bhagavan says something, you apply your senses according to what Bhagavan says, and you get the experience. Krishna consciousness is not a belief system, it is an experience system. Faith is required initially, but Krishna has promised, Arjuna, I'm going to explain things in such a way that your consciousness is going to be attached to me, and there won't be any doubt, you'll understand everything fully. There's nothing about, I'm going to explain everything to you so that you have good beliefs. I'm going to explain everything to you so you'll believe. No, I'm going to explain everything so your consciousness, the Jivatma, will be attached to me, the Supreme Atma. You'll experience that. There'll be fullness, there won't be any doubt. So that is Krishna consciousness. Krishna speaks, we apply our senses according to what Krishna says, and we get the experience. Any questions?
Mm-hmm. I just sometimes meet people on the street and they say, oh, you can't get any knowledge from books. Why is it that they say things like that?
Because they read it in some book. It's always the case. They've read one of these crazy books that say you don't need books for knowledge. This has been going on for decades. It happened during Prabhupada's time here. He would comment on that. It's still going on today. They read some stupid book, New Age book, selling millions of copies. You don't really need books for spiritual knowledge. It's all within you. Okay, we'll give them credit for that. It is within you. But that's like saying, you know, I just put the logs in my stove and the fire is, it's there, so I just don't have to do anything. The food will cook because the logs are in the stove. You've got to light the lies, get the fire out. Now, what is the process from getting it out from within you? Ask them that.
It's always very vague. Yeah, it's always very vague.
Yeah, so they want to cook with logs instead of a fire. If Krishna wants, Krishna can reveal himself through words, through so-called statues, through food. Krishna can do whatever he wants. Now, how many of you deny that Krishna can appear in prasad? Nobody denies that. Not even a newcomer denies that. So just like Krishna appears as prasad, Krishna appears as the deity, as his name, Krishna appears as the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna decides how things are going on, not you. It's the same thing as people saying, how can God come here? How can God incarnate here? Not possible. You cannot say this or that about the Supreme. Therefore, first we must understand what is Bhagavan. We must understand we are hearing from the ultimate, the Sad Aishvarya Purna, the one who is unlimitedly full of all six opulences. The other thing they say is words, 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 words. It can't be spiritual. It's just fucking words. Krishna can do whatever he likes. He can appear in words. And he's using words so you'll be bewildered by the material words. He can also use words so that you'll become liberated through the spiritual words.
Swamiji?
Yes.
Sannyas requires knowledge and vairagya. What is that knowledge, fundamental knowledge and vairagya that sustains sannyas?
All the ashrams require knowledge and vairagya. Don't just put it on the Swamiji's. Without knowledge and vairagya, jnana vairagya, no one goes anywhere in any ashram. Ask any real householder. What does ashram mean? Let me ask you that question. Ashram means a particular stance you take up for spiritual development and cultivation. So the Grihastha ashram, the Sannyas ashram, a Brahmacharya ashram, Vanaprastha, they're all based on Jnana and Vairagya. Lord Chaitanya, he brought with him knowledge and renunciation. Vairagya vijja nitya bhakti yoga. Shikshartam eka purusha parana. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Shrividhari. Kripamvidya yastamaham prabhaje. Let us surrender to Sri Krishna Chaitanya, who has brought with him from the spiritual world the essentials of bhakti, which are knowledge of Krishna and detachment from everything that does not foster Krishna consciousness. So these are the bases of ashram life. Grihastha life means Krishna is in the center. That requires knowledge and vairagya. How to detach the family from all behavior that does not directly foster Krishna consciousness.
Your solution is to surrender to the ashram.
Krishna says, surrender to me. The ashrams are devices by which you can develop your surrender to Krishna. They are means to become purified of attachment to matter while you're serving Krishna. It's not that you spend your whole life in an ashram, a particular status as a householder or renounced person. You spend your whole life just cultivating the mechanics of your ashram, and at the end, okay, now I'm ready to serve Krishna. No. Each ashram immediately begins serving Krishna. Interesting, huh? So we have a very nice... you're a family man?
I am. We
have very nice family men here. They can equip you with all jnana and vairagya, how to proceed.
Prabhupada, the Jagat Guru, has said that material... spiritual life is sense restriction and material life is sense enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
Intelligence has nothing to do with that at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong?
Unless you know how to discriminate matter from spirit, there's no question of intelligence. That's the basis, the preliminary definition of intelligence is the ability to discriminate matter from spirit.
Well, sense in German is material life.
Definitely.
And sense restriction is spiritual life.
Not always.
That's Prabhupada's definition.
No. When Prabhupada says things like that, if he did, you have to see the whole context. Simply restricting your senses doesn't mean that you're spiritual. Are the stones spiritual?
Stones not living.
Oh. What about the monkeys who jump around in the jungle with no clothes on? They're very renounced. They just live in the trees. No, spiritual means to use things in the service of the Supreme Spirit. And that is the basis of ashram life. With your knowledge and your detachment, you engage everything for Krishna's service. Children, wife, husband, home, everything.
Can you develop sannyas in grihastha?
Yes. Why did Krishna say to Arjuna in the first verse of the sixth chapter of the Gita, that the sannyasi is one who does his Vedic obligations, not simply one who doesn't do any work, one who just lights sacrificial fires all day. Arjuna was confused about that. That's why he was trying to use what Krishna was saying as an excuse not to fight the battle of Kurukshetra. We discussed, were you here last night for the talk? We discussed Arjuna saying, Tat kim kamani gauri mam. Krishna, if you think that knowledge is the best thing, then why do you ask me to engage in this ghastly warfare, which is just karmic activity, when I should really be off somewhere studying metaphysical knowledge? He didn't understand action in Krishna consciousness. Now that's why Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. He was a family man. He was a warrior. He wasn't a Brahmin. He wasn't a sannyasi. Krishna knew in the future, persons like us would ask these kind of questions. So I think we have to end here because Sunday school must begin. Who teaches the Sunday school?
A few teach.
Oh, who are they? All glory to the teachers of Sunday school. All glory to the Lord.